T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
You're listening to The Joe O Show on 670 The Score.
This hour on The Score brought to you by Honda CRV. Search ContinentalHonda.com for the Continental Difference. The end of the legislative session ends in 1 week from today, and the final bill, what looks like to be the final bill, is now out and about, getting a look at that. We discussed it earlier on in the show. And now we welcome in sports gaming attorney Daniel Wallach to the show. You can follow him on Twitter at Wallach Legal. And Daniel, I know you took a chance to take a look at this Illinois sports betting bill. What are your overall thoughts?
Besides the fact that it's 89 pages, I think it's a big I think it's highly problematic because, listen, the key for every state that's going to do this the right way is to have mobile sports betting. There has to be online platforms. New Jersey has shown the way already with 80% of the marketplace being mobile as opposed to, you know, land-based or, you know, racetrack-based betting. And this new bill has a blackout period for 540 days. What is that, a year and a half with absolutely no mobile, while Indiana and Ohio are ready to go from day one, which is, I don't think this is a good policy or a good bill to have only a land-based environment. I think the solution to the problem that was created by Rivers Casino insisting on a penalty box provision, I think this is an overreaction to that problem. Instead, what should be done is just forget about the penalty box, forget about the blackout, and just go with mobile from day one. Otherwise, Illinois and the state, the operators will be leaving a lot of money off the table, and there will be a lot of lost revenue going to Indiana, going to Iowa, and just folks not betting because they don't want to drive to a track or an OTB.
Yeah, and you're talking about now missing most likely two full football seasons with no mobile betting. So it seems to me, and tell me if you agree with this, it really seems to me that what they value the most here, this is all about what they think that they can pass, and let's just gobble up and take that money from all the license fees, more than what they're going to get on the tax rate with the mobile betting. As you put it, 80% comes that way.
Well, you know, in order to reach an accord with all the stakeholders, yeah, sometimes you have to make compromises, but I don't think this bill is the best compromise because the only entity that insisted on any type of blackout period for internet betting was Rivers Casino. If it wasn't for Rivers Casino, this bill would probably be all the way at the finish line. And in every other market that has brought mobile sports betting, you know, into the marketplace, there have been no waiting periods, no delays, no bad actor clauses, no blackout periods. The only way to do it the right way is to have mobile immediately. Otherwise, this is an antiquated form of sports wagering. This is not the 1980s or 1990s. Most people consume, you know, via, you know, e-commerce. They buy and they buy products and services over the internet. Sports betting will be exactly the same way, and to ignore it for a year and a half, 2 year period to kick it down the road, the state will lose a significant amount of money, and the operators won't be as the revenues generated by the operators will be much less. You got to have mobile betting from day one. I just don't understand it.
Yeah, I agree. No mobile betting, 540 days for a year and a half. That's obviously the lead. But outside of that issue, does the rest of the bill make sense to you?
I think the tax rate is kind of high. Most states have tax revenues on sports betting anywhere from 6.75% up to about 15%. I know Pennsylvania is an outlier at 34%. But I think 20% is a little bit on the high side. The license fees are on the high side. But what I like about the bill is that it creates the only aspect of the bill that I like is that it creates a pathway for in-stadium betting and permits sports betting to take place at the various professional sports stadiums and arenas, and this will be the first state in the country to open up that avenue for betting. But otherwise, I think the bill needs probably one more amendment to eliminate the blackout period and bring mobile betting to bear immediately. Because without mobile betting, you can't have in-play wagering. You have to understand, most of the betting that's taking place, an increasing amount of it, is once the game is underway, and having mobile is critical to the success of that market. Without mobile wagering, all the betting or most of the betting is going to be pre-game betting.
That's a great point that you bring up there. And let's talk about the sports facilities. Bulls and Sox owner Jerry Reinsdorf visited Springfield recently. So the owners in this town clearly want to be involved, and they got their way in this bill with 7 sports facilities getting licenses at $10 million a pop. And the language says a 5-block radius of the facility. So how do you think it would start once these teams do buy the licenses, and where will we be in a few years?
Well, I think ultimately what the teams want is an exclusivity zone. I mean, in order to have sports wagering taking place in and around the sports betting facility, the leagues wouldn't want to have the facility owners wouldn't want to have competition within a 5-block radius, and I'm sure they also want to control the mobile environment within those stadiums. So what it will look like, it is really in large part dependent upon mobile wagering coming into the marketplace at the same time. But for now, these facility owners can use their arenas and buildings for more than just 40 dates a year. I can envision some of the downtown arenas being utilized, for a sports wagering lounge on days that the teams aren't playing at home. So this is a manner in which these building owners can keep the lights on, 365 days a year. So I think this is a boon for the sports industry. And quite honestly, I think that the teams and the leagues that create the product certainly deserve to have some direct economic stake in the activity. Because after all, they are the producers of the game, the creators of the show, and I think it would be fair and equitable to have room at the table for the teams and the leagues to participate more directly in an economic way.
This is Joe Ostrowski with gaming attorney Daniel Wallach on 670 The Score. When it was down to 2 amendments, Daniel, one of them had the integrity fee, and now we're down to 1, and it does not include the integrity fee. What do you think about that?
I'm kind of surprised that it didn't make its way into the final bill. I think some other states have it under consideration. New York does. It doesn't look like the leagues will have and it's not called an integrity fee. It's called a royalty or a rights fee. And I believe that the leagues should be receiving, a 0.25%, 0.20%. We've seen that in the New York bill and a number of other measures, and other states have included it, but apparently that it won't come to pass in the Illinois bill unless there's another amendment next week. So I think as the creators of the product, if you're expanding sports wagering, what you're doing for the leagues or to the leagues is you're increasing their risk, increasing their expense in monitoring and investigating, and you're profiting off their product. So those 3 justifications, in my view, should give rise to cutting the leagues in for a small royalty. I mean, whether or not you consider it intellectual property right or not ignores the fact that they've created the product, without which there's no sports betting. And in horse racing, and I was on your show a couple of weeks ago and I made the same point, in horse racing, all of the off-track betting sites have to pay a percentage to the host track that puts on the show. So if any wagering that takes place on the producer's content requires that the off-track betting site kick up a host fee to the track that creates the race. And in sports, it's the same principle. And I'm surprised that the leagues haven't had more success legislatively, but I think before the end of this year, you will see a couple of states that include an integrity fee or a royalty fee in the final legislation. And I think New York is probably the best prospect for that.
And Daniel, you've done a nice job hammering this home to everybody listening, but all conversations about this bill go back to the mobile and the online betting. If you were to pick one aspect that is most important for any state that is passing legalized sports betting, it comes down to mobile, and Illinois doesn't involve that, correct?
100%. Every stakeholder, whether you're talking about the leagues, DraftKings, Rivers Casino, there is one point on which everybody agrees. There's no debate. You have to have mobile as part of the sports betting environment. This country and the economic system in this country is increasingly moving to internet-based commerce, and the way of placing wagers at the betting window has become an antiquated form of wagering. So to maximize tax revenue, to maximize profits, and also to bolster integrity safeguards, mobile has got to be the way to go. We're talking about a digital fingerprint. Every wager placed over the internet has to have credit card verification, identification of the customer. You know who places the bet. You have a digital fingerprint as to the nature of the wager, who placed it, how much. It's something that can bolster the ability of all stakeholders to safeguard the integrity of the sports and wagering environment. Betting at the windows, on the other hand, is a much more cash-based process. You don't have to show identification. So I think if you look at it from the vantage point of tax revenue, profit, market share, and integrity safeguards, it has to be a mobile-based environment. Any delay would undermine, in my view, the success of the market for the first year and a half, and would really lead to consumers opting for other choices across state borders in Indiana, Iowa, and potentially even the black market. So in my view, not having a mobile environment for any length of time, whether it be 1 week, 2 weeks, or 540 days, is a losing bet for the state of Illinois.
Illinois, like some other states that have passed sports betting bills recently, put in there no betting on Illinois collegiate sports. Where do you stand on that issue?
I think we're in an age where betting on collegiate sports is commonplace in states. In states around the country, collegiate football outpaces betting on professional football. And I think it's a political compromise to secure enough votes for passage, because if you're going to allow betting on most collegiate sporting events, I don't understand or accept the justification for carving out just the Illinois collegiate teams or the games played in Illinois. I think if you accept that we're going to allow betting on collegiate sports, it should be all in. Otherwise, you run the risk of driving people into the black market and other offshore markets, and potentially to other states that do allow that kind of betting. So it's a short-sighted approach, in my view. I think collegiate betting is a prominent part of the sports betting landscape, and making a compromise like this will only inure to the benefit of the black market.
Daniel, how will this play out over the next week?
I predict that this will somehow find a way to get done. The lawmakers and the stakeholders have 1 week left. This is the 11th hour, so to speak. I don't think we've seen the last version of a sports betting bill, and I would think that somehow the last day or two, it will all come together, and saner, cooler heads will prevail, and mobile betting will find its way back into the bill. Because to do it this way would be a failure, and to not have mobile betting, I just don't understand how it could be. And only one stakeholder, which is Rivers Casino, is the root of this problem. If it wasn't for their insistence that there be this clause to exclude DraftKings and FanDuel from the market, we wouldn't be having this discussion today. So this measure is really only a byproduct of one stakeholder in the entire market. And I think by this point next week, that issue hopefully will be resolved, and mobile betting will be available in Illinois from day one and not on a phased out basis.
That'll be
so I think it gets done.
So that would be wonderful. And you think that it will come down to next Friday?
Like it does in a number of other states. I've witnessed in New York, I remember being up until 2-3 in the morning watching the New York legislature debate fantasy sports on the last day of the legislative session in 2016. And they voted and they made it happen. And I would like to think that Illinois lawmakers would not be so short-sighted as to forfeit this opportunity for one more year while 15 other states have active sports betting laws in place. Illinois should be one of the country's leaders in this area with one of the largest population bases, one of the most fervent, sports, bases. You know, you have so many professional and collegiate sports teams. Illinois will be one of the most important markets, and it would be shocking to me that the state would, for the second year in a row, pass up the opportunity to bring something that everybody wants to have.
Daniel Wallach, gaming law and sports betting attorney on Twitter at Wallach Legal. Thank you so much, Daniel. Feel better, okay?
Thank you very much, Joe. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, that would be awesome. That would be awesome. If this is not the final bill, and in the final hour, we get to Wednesday, Thursday next week, if they decide to include mobile betting. If you've been listening tonight or last night, I've been stressing how important it is to have online wagering. And Daniel just laid it out perfectly for you, much better than I ever could, because this is what he does every day. So now you understand. So I'm getting some text messages rolling in, 67011. Reaction to that. 630, what is the benefit of Rivers Casino wanting a year and a half long blackout period on mobile betting? Because the owner of Rivers Casino said they want that. Actually, they wanted a 3-year blackout period. And I guess the compromise is a year and a half. What Neil Bloom said publicly, the owner of Rivers Casino, is why would I spend so much money on a sports betting license if DraftKings and FanDuel are going to control 80% of the marketplace like they do in New Jersey? So that's the concern, that they already have the huge customer database, so they would come in and just dominate the market. So they're trying to keep them out. That's what it comes down to. 217, will we get expanded gaming in Danville, Illinois with a land-based casino? I don't know. Not sure. I know part of the deal in Indiana was they did get a casino in Gary, and there was another town. I'm blanking which one that was. So that could be part of it, but I haven't heard much discussion about that. Our new mayor is pushing for a casino in downtown Chicago. 2019, how do we not have that yet? I don't understand. But I could see that happening in the near future. But for right now, trying to see if we can actually get a sports betting bill passed in this state. You have 8 states already up and running, and 6 more are in a holding pattern. They've already passed bills. It's just a matter of launching it. So there you go. All the good info. Talk about it tomorrow morning as well. Early odds, 8:30 a.m. every Saturday. Sports Radio 670, The Score. Coming up next, this has been a list of lists, a week of lists for Bears and former Bears. And John Greenberg from The Athletic, I love the list that he put out earlier today. We'll talk about that next. Joe Ostrowski with you. Sports Radio 670, The Score. You got the Joe O Show on 670, The Score. And this segment on The Score brought to you by Anthony Buick GMC and Gurnee. Get amazing savings during GMC Truck Month. Save 19% on a new 19 GMC Acadia and save 22% on a new 19 Buick Encore. Anthony Buick GMC and Gurnee. For details, visit anthonygurnee.com. So it's been a week of lists on chicagobears.com, the release of the top 100 Bears list. And then also next week, you can compare with the Tribune's list. Their Bears writers have been working on the top 100 list, and I'm sure some will be different. I believe Rich Campbell said this morning with Mully and Haw that half the list is within 10 spots. So there's going to be, I'm sure, a lot of disagreement. So that'll be fun. Everyone will wonder, okay, where's Jay Cutler on that list? That comes out next week in the Tribune. So watch that. So then there's another Bears list. It was with a different spin. So I found this one a little interesting. John Greenberg over at The Athletic Chicago. He did a list of the top 15 Bears, former Bears, to become broadcasters. Former Bears to become broadcasters. Guys, the other side of the glass, I've seen the list, so I don't want to cheat. First reaction, what would be your number one pick? The best former Bears now broadcasting. And it doesn't have to be current either. All-time broadcasters. Let's go there.
I would say Mike Adamley because American Gladiators, NBC5.
WWE?
Yeah.
Ooh, those are rough times for Mike. Okay, Herb says Mike Adamley
is the best. What about you, Adam?
My personal favorite is Jim Miller. He'd be my number one pick.
Why Jim Miller? I just surprises me a little bit.
I don't know why. I just enjoy him. I enjoy listening to him. I think he's got a lot of great insight. And he also happens to be one of my favorite
talk show
Bears.
Every day on NFL radio on Sirius.
Yeah, I used to listen to that almost every day. It was a great show.
You are
Brendan McCaffrey produces that show.
Herb, maybe I'm wrong, but I think Studs is the biggest Bears fan I've ever met.
It's weird.
And he's wearing a Bears jersey right now.
Why is it weird?
It's just weird. You like cape for bad running backs. And you're like, he didn't have a bad year. Jordan Howard's this and that.
Yeah, he loves Jordan
Howard.
You're going to be
back.
So mad every time he scores a touchdown for the Eagles this year.
Nah, I'm over it.
And you're going to say, let's sign him.
I'm over it.
When David Montgomery scores, you'll be fine. You'll be good.
Yeah, I don't know why you guys think I love Jordan Howard so much. My only argument
because
was that
I was on the air when the trade. I was on the air when the trade happened, and you're like, they better get something great.
That's all I was saying is they got to get something. Like, no, I was saying they got to get something.
That was part of the plan. That was part of the plan. They signed their free agent, and they targeted Montgomery.
I had no problem with what they got back for him. I had no problem with that they moved him.
All right. Calm down over there. In your Khalil Mack jersey. Is that a Bears hat, too?
No, it's a Blackhawks hat.
Okay. It's backwards, so I couldn't tell. All right. Here's John Greenberg. No, don't apologize. I just couldn't tell. Here's John Greenberg's list. Top 15 former Bears, now broadcasters. Number 15, Earl Bennett. That was a surprise at number 15. He is a podcast. By the way, he podcasts a sports betting podcast. Got to check that out. I need to bring him on early odds. 14th, Spice Adams. Should be higher. Should be higher on the list.
I didn't even think about him.
Did you see
Spice
his
Adams
video?
Is great.
Did you see his video to Dan Pompey? He should be
with
on the top 100.
Scrolling down looking for where he's at on the list.
So entertaining. Number 13, Jim Miller. 13. Oh, Studs.
Needs to be higher.
It's a gut punch. The voice of Bears preseason games, weekly Bears shows, and postgame shows you have to pay attention to. He's just kind of always there, isn't he? So you did not write that.
Clearly, they did not consult me when they're writing up Jim Miller's bio.
I disagree with that. I like getting the former quarterback's perspective, and that's why we see so many analysts in the booth now, whether you're talking about Aikman or Romo, that give you that perspective. I like hearing from quarterbacks, and I think Jim Miller does a fine job. I don't think he's just there.
That's what I agree with, too, is he does a great job breaking down, you know, especially if you're talking about quarterback play. He knows what he's talking about, and he knows how to break it down. Like, I enjoy it.
Okay, at 12, he put Peyton and Butkus. Sweetness did a little bit of everything after his retirement and before his untimely passing, mostly focusing on his business ventures, but his radio hits on The Score were very popular, as you would expect. Yeah, very true. Butkus' post-playing career is more important, more entertainment-related than sports. Who could forget his star turns on My Two Dads and Hang Time?
He was terrible.
Herb, did you write this?
No, he was terrible. He's a terrible actor.
He was, but he was really bad on My Two Dads. He was a little better on Hang Time.
He ruined Hang Time.
I dare you to say that to his face, Herb.
I mean, I would. He's like 78.
That's fair.
You think Herb could take him?
I wouldn't.
Herb's kind of old.
They'd say you're old too.
I'm not like I didn't have like knee problems and other stuff.
You think you could take him in a fight?
Yeah.
Right now, today.
He's not Ed Obradovich. Ed Obradovich is a huge human being. Like that crushes your hand currently.
If he just if OB is able to get a hand on you, it's over. It's done. But you're saying Butkus couldn't catch you. He was slow.
No, it's not that he'd catch me. I think I could take him straight up right now. I'm like Shep now. I'm challenging people to fights.
I did ask. Number 11. See, this is cheating. He put the NBC Sports Chicago crew, Forte Briggs and Alex Brown, all in one. That's not fair. Got to separate them. Come on, Greenberg.
I think Matt Forte is really good. Like, if you're going to separate them out, I would put Matt Forte at the top of that list. Especially,
incorrect.
I know. Okay, fine then.
Alex Brown is the best out of those three.
Alex Brown is good. It's like 1-1-8.
I love Alex's energy and his strong opinions. I don't always agree with what he says. But you know what? That's a good thing because you don't want to agree with everything that you hear, especially coming from the analyst chair. I would lean to Studs. I think Forte is much better than I thought he was going to be.
Especially as the season went on and he started getting, you know, got more comfortable in what they were doing. I think if he's on again next year, assuming he will be, I think he'll be even better.
And let's also add that Lawrence does a great job just setting those dudes up.
He does.
He knows what to ask which guys, and he just sets them up perfectly. Number 10, come on, Greenberg. Could have made this top 20 list. He did Crutes and Manley. Crutes is a rising star on the radio, while Manley was a short-lived host on The Score. But Manley also does pregame. I don't think he mentioned that here. Crutes, I agree with Olin, with him on Olin there. He's going to be doing this a very long time. 9, Steve McMichael. Get out of here.
Ugh.
McMichael is not better than Olin Crutes and Patrick Manley.
Never was.
And not better than the guys on NBC.
And the rest of the people you've already named on
and
that
Jim
list.
Miller. Mongo's horrendous. He was entertaining back in the day, but if we're talking about right now, he brings nothing. 8, Dan Hampton. He should have been top 6 on the top 100 list. And he gets so fired up about the Bears. I love when he was doing TV. For some reason, he's not on Fox anymore doing that. 7, Mike Adamley. Herb, your pick at 7.
Mike Adamley, when he was throwing his fastball, was hitting the corners, 95.
When I was young and I didn't know who Mike Adamley was, I just thought he was a professional broadcaster. I didn't know that he even played football.
I mean,
that's how polished he is.
Yeah, like him. I don't know if you know who Terry Gannon is. He used to play basketball at North Carolina State. Like,
yes,
I think
yes.
of those people more of as broadcasters than I think of them as athletes.
Number 6 on John Greenberg's list, former Bears turned broadcasters. Number 6 is Tom Thayer, Bears radio analyst.
Polished. Really nice.
Very good.
Yeah. Been doing that job ever since he retired.
Thought he'd be top 5, but let's see the rest of the list. 5, Dan Chiggetts.
One of the originators.
No?
Yeah, no.
I mean,
one of the originators.
His show made me want to work at The Score. I mean, so did Boers and McNeil. But, yeah, what Dan did in those years on this station, it changed radio, period. Not just sports radio, just radio.
And it gave this station some credibility.
Aww.
You know, he was the only, like, professional athlete that was here.
Studs has no idea what I'm doing.
He doesn't know what the caning is.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Could you imagine doing a segment of caning now?
I mean, no.
Bend him over.
No, because, you know, now. But, yeah.
That would never happen. Okay, top 4. Tom Waddle. Thought he would be higher. Fantastic. WGN. ESPN. Waddle's great. I thought he would be higher on the list. Number 3, Mike Ditka. I'm putting Waddle ahead of Ditka.
The only reason I put Ditka up is because of his radio shows and his TV show.
Fair.
His TV show was legendary. And I think there's a guy on that list is also going to be named later that was a part of that TV show great.
I think of the TV shows when he was the coach.
Yeah.
But he was a former Bear when he was the coach.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, man.
Okay.
He was great.
That's true. I watched every single Sunday. I couldn't wait. And when he was the coach, I couldn't wait for his interview with Bob Collins because at 7:20 the next morning, he was going to say something about somebody. Okay, that's a fair argument. I guess, yeah, Dick has definitely had a Waddle then. 2, Doug and OB. Awesome. Awesome.
I mean,
can't argue.
No, not at all. Perfect. It is like, I don't know if people ever got the chance because when they did their show, they sat out there to a bar and got in the corner, them and Brendan McCaffrey at the time or whoever was out there, Rick Camp, and they would just sit in the corner and watch the game. Or if they had a private room, they would go in that room and just, like, act like a fan. And if you had the privilege of actually seeing that live, it was great.
I always preferred when they were in studio, though. But that's me. I always think the shows are better in studio as opposed to out at a bar. And number 1... Herb, this is your guy, Johnny Morris, ahead of Doug and OB, and I certainly understand. Another guy that, when I was young, I was a broadcaster. I didn't even know much about him at the time until later on. I learned about his history with the Bears from my father.
So, same thing. Yeah. I went years without knowing Johnny Morris was a Bears player. I think he still holds the record for most catches or most yards in Bears history as a receiver, which is weird.
I think he was pushed. Was he pushed down?
I know Forte got like a lot of yards, but I think he's him or Walter Payton is still the leader in receiving yards.
Yeah. Johnny Morris is, in fact, the all-time leader in Bears receiving. You know who's number three on this list? Number three on this list is Alshon Jeffrey.
That's insane.
I mean, the record is 5,000 yards. So.
Okay, give me the top three.
Johnny Morris, Harmon Hill.
How many yards?
Johnny Morris, 5,000, the only 5,000-yard receiver in Bears history.
Well, what did Musa Muhammad say? Receivers go to die in Chicago.
Oh, so funny story. I saw a guy yesterday who I think is the only other person on the planet who owns a Musa Muhammad jersey.
I still see him from time to time.
Really?
Yeah.
This is the first time I've ever seen someone that wasn't me wearing a Musa Muhammad jersey.
How many Bears jerseys do you have?
Let's see. Khalil Mack, Musa Muhammad. Anthony Thomas is my pride and joy.
Come on. The 35?
Heck yeah, man.
Herb, remember?
Oh, yes, I do.
Every
remember.
Time I hear this name, this is the first thing I think of. We were in a fantasy football league together after Anthony Thomas's rookie season. A guy in our draft stands up. Number one pick? This is easy. Anthony Thomas, number one.
Man. The guy at number two is like LaDainian Tomlinson. He couldn't say it fast enough.
It's running up to the podium. There's no podium, but.
Okay, so anyway.
Yeah, your jersey. Yeah. Sorry, we need the jersey list.
Oh, now we're down the jersey list. All right, so where was
three.
I? The A-Train. I have.
I had to stop after that.
I used to have Grossman. I got rid of that one. I don't know what happened to my Marty Booker jersey. It got lost somewhere.
How do you
I might still have it. Devin Hester and Mike Brown. So right now I believe I have five, unless the Marty Booker
I like those last
there.
Two.
Yeah.
You can keep those forever.
Oh, yeah. I plan on keeping the Anthony Thomas jersey forever.
Why?
Because it's awesome. I love that jersey.
It's not.
I think it more became a sentimental thing for me because I wore it in a lot of backyard football games. So it's just kind of.
You should go take that 35 and
it's got blood on
put
it.
Anderson on the back. Neil Anderson.
No. A-Train.
It's probably better.
Plus,
A-Train had one, was so one
plus,
year.
Plus the 2001 team was like the first Bears team that I was like into. So it just kind of, it all made sense.
I was waiting for you to say David Terrell.
No, of course I didn't have David Terrell.
Why?
I guess I have Musa Muhammad. It would make sense that I have anyone. I never had Anthony Thomas, I think, was my second jersey after Urlacher. So I got Urlacher and then I got A-Train.
Take it down a notch on the A-Train. My God. What is going on over there?
I don't know what to tell you, man.
Every other jersey you just mentioned better, including Grossman.
I'm not going to argue with you on that.
I don't even believe the Grossman part. Yeah, that one year he was fantastic. But
The Bears receiving, all-time receiving.
Yeah.
So Johnny Morris, the only 5,000-yard receiver. And then you got to jump down about 400 yards to Harlan Hill.
Okay.
And like, then
long time ago.
4,600 yards. Then Alshon. 4,549. Then Walter Payton at 4,538. Then Mike Ditka.
Look at these eras. Like,
there's only one modern receiver on
my
here.
My God.
Johnny Morris last year was
A. Rob should break every record.
Oh, he should by far. Let's see, he's probably already on this list. No, he's not. But.
After one year. Yeah, they didn't throw him the ball enough. Don't ask Matt Nagy about that. He's very mad. Hey, about Joe, getting the ball to Cohen, or
he's going to bring it B twice, aren't you?
You damn right I'm going to look at my man B twice.
Where's Bernard Berrien?
29th.
How did he make the list?
2,197 yards. He's number 29.
See, we always talk about the quarterback play. The receivers are just as bad. I know they correlate, but come on.
Marty Booker's number 8 on this list.
He's top 10 Bears receiver? Marty freaking Booker?
Matt Forte, 7. Curtis Conway, 6.
Curtis Conway was viewed as a bust, right?
4,400 yards.
For where he was selected?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. 4,400 yards.
Oh, my gosh. Allen Robinson should tear it up. Tear up that list. All his.
Cameron Meredith is number 69 on this list.
Go ahead, say it.
Oh, I actually just, I said that before I was getting, I didn't even realize what number it was, but nice. I was really just saying, hey, Cameron Meredith, he was here for like 2 years and he's on this list.
Were you mad when they get rid of him or let him walk?
No, not at all. I mean, I was like, whatever. And he's a.
Do you believe him, Herb?
Oh, he's hella hot, probably down there in Bloomington or wherever you were at the time.
If anything, I was glad so I didn't have to hear from all the ISU people about Cameron Meredith playing for the Bears. Like,
it was a cool story. Local guy.
Yeah, I guess.
But I realized as a Bears fan at the time, like, the fact that Cameron Meredith is our number one receiver is a problem.
Yeah, on
a
real
thing.
Team. Yeah, on a real
and then,
team.
What was that year we had that guy from San Diego that went to Indianapolis. Now he signed with the Patriots. I forget his name. Dontrell Inman, when he was doing work.
And he walked in near the end of the year.
Yeah.
Right.
And I was like, man, Dontrell Inman's killing. And the Bears like, nah, we're letting him go. Let's get some real receivers in here. And this past year, they had some people that can catch the ball. I'm very impressed by what Ryan Pace did.
They had to do that, though.
I was really down on them his first couple of years.
That's how I felt when Cam Meredith left. Like, when he left, and I saw some people that were upset, and I was like, why are you upset over Cameron Meredith leaving?
He's the guy that
shouldn't be higher than number four on your receiver depth
chart. They had to revamp that entire group. Because, let's not forget, there were a lot of misses when he was trying to find receivers, too, especially in free agency. Bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall as the number 17 Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. And the bottom of the hour, this is timely, brought to you by the Chicago Bears. See past, meet present at Bears 100 Celebration Weekend, June 7th through the 9th in Rosemont. Don't miss out on players like Khalil Mack, Mitchell Trubisky, Akeem Hicks, and more on stage with your favorite Bears alumni. With free autographs, photo ops, and one-of-a-kind panels, Bears 100 Celebration Weekend is a place to be June 7th to the 9th. Visit chicagobears.com for tickets. Coming up next, we'll find out what Julie DeCaro has cooking from 10 p.m. to midnight. I'm Joe Ostrowski on 670 The Score.
And here comes
Pretzel. Joe Ostrowski with you on The Score. So Julie DeCaro joins me in studio. Her show starting in about 10 minutes right here on The Score. So you went down the rabbit hole of grobbernet.com.
I did. Well, yeah, I mean, once I got past the shock that there was something called grobbernet, grobbernet.com. Well, I kept putting in grobber.net and nothing's coming up.
I think it used to be that. Anyway.
Grobbernet.com. I'm confused. And it's, yeah, I mean, it's pretty much what you said it was. It's, you know.
Bad.
I do feel like it's like Creed Bratton's webpage.
Oh, yeah. So you're going to talk about that tonight.
Yeah, we're going to get into that a little bit. I mean, okay. First of all, the list of the worst Bears of all time, I think we need to go through.
Yeah, you go through the list. Did you see any of the pictures? Are there pictures posted of him over the years?
I don't know. I didn't go that far down. They're usually all over the desktop in here.
I know.
One time I come in, there's like all pictures from his vacation all over the desktop.
In the swimsuit?
Yeah.
With the shirt off?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's... I mean, I think the concept of a shared computer is lost on less. Do you think he has a computer at home? Or is this it?
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
I think this is his computer.
You think he doesn't have a computer at his home?
Well, I don't know. I mean, why would you put all your vacation pictures on this computer?
Think he has internet on his phone? Yes. Right?
I mean, I assume so.
Does he have a Nokia with the little antenna sticking up out of his pocket?
Hey, that was a good phone. That was my first phone.
It seemed like it lasted a long time. Most people's first phone. But
yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah. So we're doing all we can to avoid talking about the Cubs and what we saw. 11 blown saves. We are not even 2 months into the season, Julie, and we're talking about 11 blown
saves.
Yeah,
it's not great. Yeah.
And they know it.
I mean, I know they know it, but there's not a whole lot you can do about it now.
Well,
the time to fix
May.
It was in the off season. Yeah. October is May.
They walked to the season short arms. So I was talking about it earlier. I think they need a couple of arms because some people feel, well, if you sign Kimbrel, everything's fixed. Or
he's not going to be ready for a month.
Exactly. If you make that one big move, then you'll be okay. I don't think so. So you have the July 31 deadline, and then you don't have that cushion of another trade deadline a month after that. So you're probably going to need to add more arms than you typically do at July 31st.
I've crunched a bunch of numbers on Kimbrel. So we're going to get into that.
Did it change your mind after looking some of the numbers?
No, it's just like what you're giving up if you sign him. What if you sign him before the draft? What he's worth, what he's asking for.
Did you see the article on FanGraphs today when they broke it down for each team? What they would have to give
yes.
up?
Yes.
Studs and Herb were in the studio when I saw that and what it was for the Cubs. I couldn't believe it.
That's it?
The pick?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's been the narrative that's taken over. Okay, after the draft in a couple weeks, then teams will fight for Kimbrel,
right.
And people assume that the Cubs are going to be the only
right.
ones
in line.
I don't even think they're going to be involved.
I don't either, and they're not even mentioned in connection with him at all. It's been the Rays, it's been Philly, it's been Boston. I don't think they're going to be in on Kimbrel. And even if they are, you're not going to get him till July.
Right.
You need to fix this before July. You can't go on blowing saves twice a game.
How do you go Cubs convention, an entire offseason, then spring training? Urgency, urgency, urgency. We're not going to waste any at-bats. Nothing's going to be wasted. And they're wasting all of these potential wins.
Well, and the thing that makes it so much more egregious is that all of this, you know, the Cubs didn't have any money to sign a reliever thing, is coming up at the same time as they're going to get $90 million in 2019. Really, you can't float $18 million or so for 6 months?
And then the other thing we didn't even have time to get into tonight was about what we're hearing about the cable deal. So now everybody's going to pay.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, $4. Yeah. No, for those that don't know. So it sounds like everybody's going to have to pay $4,
yes.
no matter, even if you want Marquee or not.
Well, I mean, look, I don't want the Tennis Channel. That's another Sinclair one, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I've got the Tennis Channel, and I assume I'm paying something for
Does
it.
Does that come in an extra sports?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean.
But I mean,
once you start looking at
the
itemized charges on a cable bill, you just start to get furious.
You know what? I don't even mind that much paying an extra $4 to always know where the Cubs game is and not have to hunt around for 20 minutes to find it.
Yeah,
because sometimes when it's on like CSN Plus, I'm just like, where is the game? You know? But
it's annoying.
The fact that my money's going to go to Sinclair and there's nothing I can do about it is upsetting. Like, I wish there was another option.
So you're going to discuss that tonight?
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Good.
Why not?
Good. Good. Anybody coming on?
Evan Altman's going to be on. We're going to talk about our new podcast we have coming up together. And then Chris Emma's going to be here. We'll talk about the Bears, OTAs, and if Chuck Pagano's sticking his fingers too much into Vic Fangio's defensive scheme.
All right. Sounds fun. We'll be listening up until midnight right here on The Score. Thanks to Bruce Levine and Daniel Wallach for coming on. Producers Herb Lawrence, Adam Studzinski. The podcast available on 670thescore.com. I'll be here tomorrow morning at 8:30 a.m. Talk about sports betting in Illinois and some NBA as well. Joe Ostrowski with you. Julie's next on The Score.
I don't have a comment on that.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.